You're listening to Let's Talk Fantasy Football, where men of fantasy genius have realized,
hey guys, we don't need real football skills to dominate on the fantasy field.
So slap on your pads and grab your helmet. Shit's about to get real.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Let's Talk Fantasy Football. I'm your host tonight. My name is Nick Walsh, and I'm here with my good pal, the keeper of the recap. I'm here with Vinny Gonzalez. Vinny, what's up, dude?
What's up, man? All right. I'm, still reeling from a loss. So I have two losses on the season so far in our league of record, but it's early, baby.
Yeah, it is early. I also am coming off a loss. First loss after really just completely destroying the first couple of weeks. So it is what it is, but we'll figure it out. We'll recap the headline injury of the week may or may not have something to do with it, but we'll get into that in a minute. What me and Vinny are doing tonight is we will be doing the week 3 recap, guys. We'll be going through some injuries, some news, some general takes on performances. We'll be going through a couple streamers that we like, that's quarterback, tight end, and defense. And then we'll be going through the Thursday night preview because we're just not sure the exact timing of the preview this week. So wanted to make sure we get that covered so you guys know who to play. Though spoiler alert, it's a little bit hairy, that game. But anyway, before we get into that, guys, this podcast is coming courtesy of my bookie. At the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. You got game-winning touchdowns on two-minute drives. You got running backs racing down the sidelines. You got running backs getting hurt on high ankle sprains and being out 4 to 8 weeks with no one to stop them from being out 4 to 8 weeks in walking boots on the sideline. We'll get into that. There's nothing else like the NFL, guys. There's no better way to make the games even more exciting, though, than to bet on them. So do the smart thing. Go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts, better lines than any other sports book. And don't forget, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. So make sure you're going to mybookie.ag. They're the best in the business. It's where Vinny plays. It's where I play. And it's where you should too. Guys, that's promo code. I can't talk right tonight. I don't know what's going on. Promo code, let's talk, LETSTALK. That gets you a 100% sign-up bonus up to $1,000, guys. So make sure you are checking that out. Vinny, did you put any bets down this past week?
Yeah, my biggest one this week was hitting the Texans live. They were underdogs, and then Chargers went up first score with a touchdown, and I was like, I'm hopping on this. And then that paid out pretty big. I think I got it at like plus 370.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, and I put like 50 on it, so it was nice.
Nice, man. That's pretty awesome. Hopefully you continue to do the same this week, and hopefully our listeners do as well. I know I will be. So, Vinny, let's get into it, starting with some injuries. I've alluded to it twice so far. The biggest injury of the week is clearly Saquon Barkley going down with a high ankle sprain, out 4 to 8 weeks. Just as it seemed like the offense was getting good. So Saquon, for the first time, and who knows, they're playing against the Bucs, but for the first time in Saquon's career, it seemed like the Giants offense was pretty exciting. And this is just terribly disappointing. I don't know. What do you think here? What's the outlook for the Giants? What's the outlook for Wayne Gallman, who is, should be his backup here? What are your opinions?
My immediate takeaway is this is just a massive, massive bummer. If you had your first pick or a top three pick, you probably wound up with Saquon in some form or fashion. And this is probably the worst thing to happen. It's really early in the season. He's going to be out for a long time. I think the more likely time frame is it's, on the latter side of 8 weeks. So it's going to be a tough one. And he's, he's irreplaceable. So we're looking at Wayne Gallman as probably number one waiver, probably for a lot of people. And then for anyone doing the free agent budget, probably a lot of people will be putting a decent chunk on him. And I don't necessarily know if that should be the case because they're not going to run him like Saquon. He's not going to have Saquon production. And there's going to be some sort of committee. The Giants really have no one behind him, Wayne Goldman, that is. But they're going to have to figure something out, whether it's free agency. There are guys like Kenyon Drake who are on the trade block. You put C.J. Anderson here in our notes, who worked out for the Texans, but you're totally right. It does make more sense for him to go to the Giants at this point in time. And there's like Jay Ajayi too floating around. So I feel like they'll sign one of those guys. Benny Cunningham also worked out for them. But it's just one of those things where I think it's going to be more of a committee sort of thing. But more often than not, I feel like Gallman's going to be the number one pickup for most leagues.
Yeah, I think Gallman has to be sort of the number one pickup, you know, particularly if you were a Saquon owner. But I kind of have the same feeling of just like creeping dread as I put in the waiver for Gallman. Not that I'm really going to get him most places, but like I have that feeling of just like, I don't know if this is going to work out for me because, you know, the game script was bad for him. Obviously, after Saquon's injury, they were throwing the ball a lot, that sort of thing. But it's worth noting that Daniel Jones didn't really target the running back very much in the pass game. And I don't know if that's just, you know, I do know it's definitely small sample size, but like, I don't know if that's predictive at all or just like a byproduct of the game and what was happening and that sort of thing. It's really difficult to tell. And like you said, there are so many guys out here who they could bring in, who could immediately have roles with the team. So, you know, Gallman has been a guy who's gotten a decent amount of run in the past when injuries have forced him in there. But we'll sort of see how it goes. In the meantime, it's sort of a hold your nose and do it on the waiver, I think. T.Y. Hilton re-injured his quad this past week. No timetable, but I mean, like I've heard like different reports. Some people have said he might be out for a while. Some have said he might play week four. So I don't know. Do you have any insight here? And then I guess what happens if he doesn't play?
Well, I mean, did you see him on the sideline with, they put like a literal bag of ice, like that you pick up at a liquor store, like just on his quad and just like fucking wrapped it. And I was just like, that is really bad. And they said if he kept playing or tried to come back in, he probably would have torn it. So I don't know. I feel like this is something the Colts would want to just ease T.Y. Hilton, give him off for a while. But again, we've talked about, because there's a chance that he wasn't going to go another week. And it's just like, I don't know who that other wide receiver is going to be to like usurp his role. I really have no idea. But I feel like for the timetable, I don't think he's coming back probably for two to 3 weeks.
Okay, that's fair. I think in the immediate short term, like, I guess there will be someone to step up, whether it's Paris Campbell or Zach Pascal or Deion Kane or that sort of thing. Like, you would think there will be someone to step up. I think in the meantime, it might be sort of a combination, particularly because they play the Raiders this week, of you know, the tight ends maybe, and then Marlon Mack just getting everything, you know?
True.
Just trying to give him the ball as much as possible, really, really slow down the game and win with their defense in the run game. So we'll see there. Keep an eye on the news. But T.Y. Hilton, if he is in your lineup, you're going to want to have some sort of backup plan for him if he's not able to go, at least for this week. LeSean McCoy re-injured his ankle. Not something that you really want to see. He was kind of splitting work with Daryl Williams early in the game. Who, let's actually just talk about Daryl Williams, because I was on Darwin Thompson. And Daryl Williams was clearly the guy who was out ahead. He went out there and had, I put five, but I believe it was 9 runs for 62 yards, and then 5 targets, 5 catches, 47 yards. So a very solid game, as the running back for the Kansas City Chiefs generally does have. We just talked about Gallman with McCoy, you know, up in the air and Damian Williams still up in the air. How high are you prioritizing Daryl Williams this week?
I was just about to say, this is probably the guy I would target over Gallman, because you get a shot to get in on that Chiefs backfield, which has always been valuable. And we talked a lot in the offseason that Damian Williams wasn't a sure thing. He, you know, is already injured. And then, you know, McCoy has had sort of like nicks here and there, but, you know, lower leg injuries throughout his career that just kind of nag. And then this one was sort of especially bad. He had a limp coming into the game, had a really good game, and then, you know, he had to leave because he re-injured it. But I'd probably be putting a waiver in for Williams. Taking a shot, like, there's a chance that McCoy and Damian Williams are both active, and it's kind of a miss, but I feel like you got to take a chance on it.
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs' offense is clearly a much better offense to have the running back in than the Giants' offense is, so keep that in mind. Though the Giants do have a very good matchup against Washington this week. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But yeah, I'm right there with you. I think he's one of the top waiver ads. You know, if you're not going for Gallman, then Darrell Williams is probably the guy that you should be. Moving on to Ito Smith. Sorry, were you going to say something?
No.
Okay, cool. Moving on to Ito Smith. He concussed himself. So.
It's a funny way to put it.
Yeah. I realized that as I was like, sounds like he like pulled a Gus Frerotte and head butted a wall. Yeah. But anyway, he has a concussion. Devontae Freeman kind of had a good week. He kind of had the week that both you and I were looking for. It seemed like 16 carries, 88 yards, four targets, three catches, 7 yards. And he did that on 90% of snaps. Now the 90% of snaps was likely because Ito Smith was out. And if Ito Smith is out, that's obviously good for Devontae Freeman, but I don't think it's as good as it initially appears, because in the past or this past week, both Brian Hill and actually within all three first weeks, Brian Hill and Quadre Allison, who are the two running backs sort of behind Ito Smith, were both inactive. And that's because they keep Kenyon Barner active for his special teams work. So I think the bad news here is that one of those two, Brian Hill and Quadre Allison, will be active if Ito Smith does not go. And I think we'll kind of step into that Ito Smith role a little bit. Do you agree or disagree there?
No, I agree. I mean, they're not going to run Freeman like a workhorse, I don't think, because in the past he's gotten hurt with that workload. But like in this case, it's still an upgrade for Freeman just because, you know, Hill and Olsen are not as good as Ito Smith. Or like Ito Smith was having a great year in relief of Freeman. So I don't think they'll be able to sort of breathe down Freeman's neck to like eat into playing time. But I still think it's a plus in the Devontae Freeman will be okay direction for the rest of the season or you know, for this short term till Ito Smith gets back.
Okay. Yeah. Freeman really, you know, we talked about it last week. He did have a very encouraging game despite not getting in the end zone. So we'll see what happens there. I don't know that Brian Hill or Quadre Olsen are worth going after at this point, though I did like Brian Hill a lot in the preseason. I thought he played very well, but you know, it's the preseason, who knows. Moving on to Pittsburgh, and we'll talk a little bit about the Pittsburgh team as a whole here, but Vance McDonald, shoulder injury. He is currently in a sling. The big news that kind of broke right before we started recording actually is the Seahawks are trading Nick Vinette, one of their tight ends, to Pittsburgh, which would seem to imply that this is worse than they're letting on to this point. You know, we'll sort of see how Nick Vinette gets used, if at all. You know, Xavier Grimble is obviously going to be there as the backup, though I don't think he's worth picking up or going after. What do you think do you have any sort of insight into where, like, how bad this is with, or how bad you think it is with Nick Vinette getting traded? Like, that's bizarre, right? I'm not, like, making that up.
Yeah, so it happened right before we got on, and I was just like, oh, shit. So immediately I'm just like, okay, Vance McDonald's fucked up. Like, he's in a sling. They haven't said anything since he's been, like, you know, labored with the shoulder injury. So until we get clarification, we won't know for sure, but everything looks very bad. To the point where if your waivers go through on Thursday like ours and should, you would probably be considering dropping Vance at this point, even with less news than, you know, we don't really know for sure, but everything's pointing in a very bad direction for him.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's really, you know, I would wait a little bit on dropping him, but it doesn't seem good here. Let's talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers as a whole, because Mason Rudolph made his debut as a starter this past week. It didn't go great outside of a couple, big plays towards the end of the game. If you're a James Conner owner, how hard are you panicking?
I'm panicking like a lot. It just looks bad. They do get the Bengals this week on Monday night, another fucking great one. but it's like he has to have a good game there. If he doesn't, full freak out mode. Like, I feel like I'm already in full freak out mode as a James Conner owner in one or two leagues, but it's just, it has not panned out. They have looked very bad. I get the Roethlisberger injury, you know, lowered the offense as it was, but even with Roethlisberger, Conner was getting lucky falling into the end zone and hasn't really looked great. So I'm very nervous.
Yeah. I mean, if he doesn't do it this week, like, he's not going to do it. This right. is this like at home against the Bengals, who have been terrible against the run and given up tons of points to the running backs. This is the week to do it. So if it doesn't happen here, I don't even know what I would advise if like you own him, you know, like at this point you're holding him and hoping it happens this week. But if it doesn't, like, I don't fucking know.
And if he doesn't have a good game, this is probably your last chance to trade him. Do you suck it up and just, like, take a gamble that he doesn't have a great week against the Bengals and just kind of trade him now? Because I feel like this is probably your last chance, because he either gets it done versus the Bengals, then, you know, he could still struggle the rest of the season.
I think
you trade him now while he has value, or see what happens?
I think I prefer maybe hoping he has a big game against the Bengals and then kind of looking at his schedule and seeing what the situation is. I'm not really entirely familiar there, but like maybe hoping he has a big game against the Bengals and then trying to trade him, you know, cause at that point you'll have the people like, oh, James Conner's back. But yeah, I'm not really sure there.
I feel like you're going to have to package him no matter what. You have to put something enticing, like probably a wide receiver too, and Connor, and try to make some kind of bigger trade and sort of disguise what you're doing, because you just kind of want to get him off your team, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're trading him for a wide receiver, like, who are you getting? You know, like, Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore? Like,
yeah, I'm trying to, like, maybe like Larry Fitzgerald?
Okay, yeah, I guess that sounds about right. Anyway, let's move on to Julian Edelman, chest injury. He is expected to be back and fine, but something to monitor there. Of course, the Patriots are now without Antonio Brown. Side note to Julian Edelman's injury, Philip Dorsett should be rostered in all leagues right now.
Yes, he should be picked up, owned, and probably played. He's in on three wide receiver sets. You know, it's always risky playing a Patriot, but he's had a great season so far. And I don't know, this injury doesn't, you know, it's not like bad for Edelman because he should be back, but also Josh Gordon was a little banged up going in and out of the game with a finger injury. So to get a piece of the Patriot offense is something that you should want to do. So pick up Philip Dorsett.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, particularly with the lack of targets to the tight end this year, I think they can support three wide receivers in games that will be more competitive than maybe some of their games have been so far. Because I don't think we can expect this game script blowout every single week, or the blowout game script, rather.
Also, tight end news for them. I think they get Ben Watson back soon. If not this week, next week, I think.
Okay, so maybe that changes the way they're sort of setting up and you know, running the ball, that sort of thing, or who they're kind of trying to get the ball to, but we'll see how it goes. Okay, moving on to Cam Newton. Cam has a Lisfranc injury, which is normally a 4 to 8 or 6 to 8 week timeline. We'll sort of see how this all goes, but if I'm the Panthers, I am not trying to rush him back at all, because Kyle Allen slung the fucking pig around, and I know it was against the Cardinals, but 19 of 26, 261 yards and 4 touchdowns, pretty good. And when he played in week 17 of last year, also pretty good. So, I mean, I'm buying in on Kyle Allen. I bought in on him before this week, and, you know, I thought like it was like a pretty evident thing, particularly on DraftKings where he was 4K. But yeah, like, I'm in on Kyle Allen. I think in good matchups, he should be a guy you should consider starting.
Yeah. And they do have a good one this week against the Texans. So, I was very wrong. I was talking a lot of shit to you on our last podcast, cause you were just all about the Panthers still and Kyle Allen. And then they just fucking torch the Cardinals. But, Kyle Allen's sample size is still a little small, but it's looking like it's a thing. So I'm not fully on board, but I like your optimism, Walsh.
Hell yeah. Kyle Allen's going to be sick, dude. He's going to be sick. I do think he is legitimately good. Also, like, could this be the end of Cam? Like, if Kyle Allen keeps playing well.
I feel like he could go to a different team. Maybe he gets traded, which would be absolutely insane. But they do have, like, if Kyle Allen keeps performing and Cam's still out, like, you know, for 4 to 6 weeks, possibly eight, they still have Will Greer as their backup to Kyle Allen now. They're kind of set with or without Cam in that sort of regard. So if Kyle Allen plays well, they still have Greer backing him up. So they're in a good position to sort of, I guess, listen to offers or anything like that. It's, you know, it's crazy to talk about Cam not being a Panther anymore, but that could be, you know, something that gets talked about as weeks go on.
Yeah. And just to, I guess, sort of clarify a little bit, like, obviously we don't think Kyle Allen is going to have four touchdowns every week. Like, that's not the expectation.
Correct.
But him doing that in a matchup, a very, very good matchup, is obviously a positive sign. Like, it's a positive sign that he can be a guy who can maybe carry your team a little bit.
Yeah. Dominating a team that you should and, you know, getting it done is very impressive. Doing it against a team that you shouldn't is even more impressive. So I want to see more Kyle Allen, but if he's going to beat the piss out of bad teams, stream the hell out of him.
Yeah. 100%. Moving on to Taylor Gabriel. He had 3 touchdowns in the Monday night game and then got a concussion.
I felt, you know, bad for him.
Yeah, seriously. The TDs were super impressive, but we've talked, like, almost every week and even before the season just about, like, how hard it is to project, like, Taylor Gabriel. I mean, case in point here, it's hard to project him.
And, like, by proxy, it makes everyone on the Bears wide receiving core incredibly hard. Like, I was thinking full on Allen Robinson was going to have this game. And then you get Taylor Gabriel doing it. So Mitch, like, sort of sucks. Like, he had a good game, but, you know, he just looks bad at times. So looks bad more often than not.
Yeah.
So, it's just going to throw things all out of whack. You still play Allen Robinson, but if Gabriel's in now and they still have Anthony Miller, it's just going to be a fucking mess.
Yeah. I mean, Allen Robinson also, I believe, has 0 touchdowns so far this season. That's going to change. So if you have Allen Robinson and you're kind of like, hey, what's going on? You've been okay, but not great. Like, continue with Allen Robinson. He will be just fine. Yep. On the Broncos side of the ball, we had Royce Freeman leave with a shoulder injury. I haven't really heard anything since then, so it doesn't seem too serious. Philip Lindsay got in the end zone, though, and honestly, Freeman was still productive with that shoulder injury. Is this a situation where both of these guys can be pretty productive?
Yeah, I think so. And the way they play them, like, they're really both have been productive since week one. So I'm liking what I'm seeing. It was the first touchdown for either of these backs going to Lindsay this week. But yeah, Royce Freeman came out, went back in. So I feel like it's not a problem. And I feel like he's one of those guys you can consider as a flex or an RB2 if you're really fucked.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. He was on the Millie Maker winning lineup. Philip Lindsay was. I felt stupid because it's just a guy, like, I didn't even consider even a little bit, like, this week, you know.
That's how it's done.
Yep. But I guess that is true. Everyone else in that lineup, like, I was looking at it, I was like, everyone else I was kind of on, I just, like, didn't have it in the exact right order. But yeah, Philip Lindsay, I was just never considering for a moment. All right. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside played like shit, has a heel injury, and Alshon is expected to play. I think we can write him off.
Yes, sir.
And then the last injury on the offensive side of the ball we wanted to talk about is James Devlin, who obviously is not a fantasy, an impactful fantasy player. He's on IR with a neck injury, so, you know, he is eligible to return later in the season. But I think the question here is this good or bad for Sony Michel? And can things really get any worse than they have been for Sony Michel the first couple of weeks?
Yeah, I don't even know. I don't, like, I look at Michel and I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, he runs right into his lineman. He gets tackled immediately. He's, you know, falling into the end zone, which, you know, is all right. But I don't know. I still feel like as the season goes on, the Patriots will get back to their running ways, you know, as, you know, playoffs get closer and they want to salt games away. So I think Michel is a hold for me. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm not listening to offers or looking to deal him since he's playing so, you know, hit and miss. So that's my fucking take on that.
Yeah.
I'm on both sides and it sucks.
Yeah, I think the good thing about this Devlin injury for Michelle is that Devlin isn't going to, like, vulture any touchdowns anytime soon. I think the bad thing is that Rex Burkhead had 79% of the snaps this past week in a game that, like, this should have been three smash games for Sony Michelle. And instead what we have is a terrible game, an okay game week two, and another terrible game for him. Like, this is bad. This is three spots where they should be wanting to use him a ton, and they haven't used him a ton, and he looks like shit when they do use him. So, like, I don't know. Maybe you're trying to sell him to someone, like, who thinks he can get back, but also you're going to get pennies on the dollar for where you drafted him. So it's a little bit tough here with Michelle. I'm not really sure what to do going forward. And while we're on it, like, do you buy Burkhead?
I feel like he should be owned, but I'm, you know, every week, like, I feel like you wouldn't be inclined to start him, but who the fuck knows? Like, I just cannot predict that backfield usually. I thought Michelle was going to provide a lot more clarity this season, and he has not. So, I mean, Burkhead should be owned. I just don't know what the fuck you do with him after that.
Yeah, I mean, when White got ruled out this week, like, in my, like, that's something I should have been more on Burkhead when White got ruled out. He got ruled out due to the birth of his child, so it's not like he's hurt or anything.
That got me more on Michelle.
That's the thing is, like, in retrospect, I like the way it worked out was that it worked out for Burkhead. But in my head, I was like, this should be more of a Sony game.
Right.
But, like, I'm wondering if I should have just been more on Burkhead from the get-go, or whether that, like was the process bad for thinking that it was going to improve Michelle's chances, or was the process good and Burkhead just kind of played better?
And he has been playing better, which is also a shitty thing for Michelle. So, like, every time Burkhead touches the ball, he's getting positive yards, looks a lot better. It's just a very rough situation. I don't know what we expected in the Patriots backfield. I feel like this is probably my first year where I was very naive about it after, like, literal years of just saying, fuck that backfield, I'm out. I finally start to get, like, into it and say, like, hey, Michelle could bring, you know, a solid back there. But here we are again, already week three complaining.
Yeah, it sucks, man. It sucks. I think I'm with you. Like, it's, I think after last year, like, the fact that I was, like, very right about James White for a lot of the season, I think gave me too much confidence predicting this backfield. And, like, now it's fucking me.
It really is, dude. I don't know. This is what they do.
Yeah. Anyway, let's run through quickly some defensive injuries that might have impacts on their teams. We'll just kind of breeze through these. But Malik Hooker, safety for the Colts. He's the one who had that extremely sick one-handed pick against the Chargers. What was that, week two or week one? Whichever one. But anyway, he has a knee injury. He's out 4 to 6 weeks. He has been a huge part of this Colts defense. And you know, I don't know that it's a coincidence that Matt Ryan shredded the Colts after Hooker left in that game. So keep an eye on this. I think maybe you know, the Indianapolis pass defense might take a bit of a hit there. We've got Miles Jack of the Jags. He was injured. He is uncertain whether or not he is going to go this week. Darius Slay, shutdown corner for the Lions, also uncertain, so keep an eye on the news there. And then Derek Wolfe, stud defensive lineman for the Broncos, also uncertain whether he is going to go. That would likely affect their run defense more than anything else. Vinny, you have anything to add on those?
No, well done.
All right, cool. Let's get into our segment called Things That Happened. Things That Happened. Hey. All right, so the first thing that happened is the staunch realization that all of the Packers are going to be fucking really frustrating to own. So after week two, we saw Aaron Jones get a career high in carries, and we were like, sweet, this is it. And then LaFleur was like, you know what? I think I'm going to have to even up these carries. God damn, did he even up those carries. Aaron Jones had significantly fewer snaps than Jamal Williams and had 10 carries for 19 yards. He got in the end zone twice, so take that for what you will. But one target, one catch, 4 yards. Jamal Williams, 12 carries, 59 yards, 2 targets, 2 catches, 27 yards. This sucks. What do we do about it?
I don't fucking know. If Jones doesn't fall in the end zone twice, you're freaking the fuck out. You got bailed out, and they want to do what they want to do, and splitting the carry seems to be what they want to do. Is Jones more talented? Probably. Is he going to see more of the field? Probably not. It's a rough one, and I'd probably be looking to deal Jones to anybody that would, you know, listen to me.
Yeah, I would maybe be looking for that owner who doesn't realize that Aaron Jones only got 39% of the snaps and maybe just sees that he had 14 fantasy points and is like, oh, this is fine. You know, it's like, no, it's not fine. It's not fine at all.
No.
So, yeah, I don't know. Do you see any sort of benefit to starting Jamal Williams?
I don't, but I feel like he should be owned if this is – they haven't had a lot of success running the ball other than like Jones having that monstrous game. I forget which week. Week two,
yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, Williams should be owned. I feel like it could develop into a situation that's sort of Royce Freeman, Philip Lindsay-like. But right now, I'm just not too sure.
Yeah, it's really tough to project. I mean – this is not a high volume offense. We know Matt LaFleur is slowing it down, you know, trying to keep it deliberate. And it sucks. It sucks really bad because in this slow pace of an offense, you're not really going to be able to successfully feature two backs unless they're extremely efficient. And that hasn't been the case so far. In the past game, the targets have been a little inconsistent between the top two targets, though I will say, it's nice that we definitely have come to a conclusion on who the top two targets are, because MVS through the first 3 weeks has 6 targets, 5 targets, then 10 targets this past week. Devontae Adams has 8, 9, and 4. You know, he was being covered this past week. Jesus, I just had it on the tip of my tongue.
Chris Harris.
He was being covered by Chris Harris. And wasn't that week 2? Or am I? No, they just
played the – yeah.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, so he was being covered by Chris Harris. That sort of makes sense. MVS and Adams are clearly the two targets, though, because Geronimo Allison has not done shit outside of a touchdown in week 2. He is clearly droppable. What do you think about these two guys going forward, MVS and Adams? Or do you have a preference – and then what are you doing week to week with them?
I mean, Adams, you're starting no matter what. I feel like Adams is definitely a hold. Like, just keep believing that Rodgers will just get really pissed at LaFleur and just be like, all right, I'm just throwing to Adams like a shit ton. Because they're already pissed at each other. I feel like Rodgers has already been talking about the play calling and not targeting Adams enough. So I feel like he's going to blow up eventually, probably in a Mike Evans way. Just hold on to him. Don't trade him. Don't listen to offers. Just – I feel like it's going to get better for him. As far as MVS goes, most of his production was on like the Rodgers make the defense jump off sides and I'm going to throw a bomb. So he got lucky sort of on that one play, but the 10 targets is still encouraging. So I'm definitely leaning more towards MVS than Allison, which okay. Is good because we're starting to get perspective on that.
Yeah. That part is good. You know, we'll talk about it later, but I think this should be a pretty solid week for both of them. Let's talk a little bit about, though, a guy whose targets have declined over the past 3 weeks, and that's John Brown. You know, he started off with 10 targets week 1. He caught a couple deep ones, got in the end zone, and I was immediately like, John Brown is a wide receiver 1. You know, he's going to be fucking great. And then these next 2 weeks, he gets 8 targets and then 5 targets. And it's not like he's been – like, he hasn't had any weeks where it's just where you're like, fuck, man, he really boned me on this week. But he hasn't gotten in the end zone. He hasn't gotten any deep completions since then. Are you concerned that his role is decreasing, or do you think it's just kind of a blip on the radar?
Probably a blip. I wouldn't be too concerned. It's just that, you know, John Brown can go right back to his week 1 and just – at the very least hit a long touchdown for you. I love him as a flex wide receiver three. That could really just like make your week. So I'm still hanging on to him. He might be a buy low if you're concerned about the decrease in targets, but I just feel like that game against the Bengals too was just weird as shit. So they, you know, the Bills just didn't look right for a majority of the game. And I think they're trying to run it more than they probably should have been throwing on the Bengals as well. So there is that. I think that was just a very strange game.
Yeah. I was wondering, I didn't really watch any of that or look at whether there was like shadow coverage at all, but I guess there probably wasn't, but like, do you think Brown being matched up on William Jackson had anything to do with it or?
Yeah. I mean, if I'm going against the Bengals, I'm targeting Drake or Patrick because he sucks. And mm-hmm. I feel like he probably saw a decent amount of, or just saw too much William Jackson to begin with.
Okay, fair enough. Let's talk about the Bengals for a second because Auden Tate has taken the third receiver role from Damian Willis. And I mean, by third receiver role, I guess you mean like the AJ Green role, which like isn't necessarily the third receiver role. Over the first 2 weeks, it was very clearly Tyler Boyd and John Ross. Now we have Auden Tate getting involved. He got 10 targets, 6 catches, 88 yards in week 3. Are you buying that? And are you buying that John Ross might have a little bit lower of a floor than we thought?
I mean, we've been warning people about the John Ross thing for a while. It's just like enjoy the good games if you play him and he has them, but his role is going to be very limited when AJ Green gets back. And now they're already trying. Like they tried with Damian Willis and, you know, he was sort of a cool preseason story and he earned the role, but already lost it to Auden Tate, who's kind of a physical freak. This game I did not see coming for him. Bit of a weird call by the Bengals to try to involve him so much. He's a bit of a mismatch, but I feel like they should have just, you know, peppered, not like they didn't, but more so with Boyd for that game. But this is another anomaly and kind of a non-factor, especially since Green is probably going to resume practicing after this week and probably be on the field by week 5 or 6. So really not a big deal.
All right. Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, Boyd continues to remain consistent in their slot. Ross being primarily covered by Tre'Davious White might have something to deal with or to do with that as well. As he's really shown himself to be a pretty elite corner so far this year. Moving to the Browns, who look absolutely terrible. Nick Chubb was in on all but one snap after kind of hovering around 60 to 70% snaps during the first 2 weeks. Do you buy that this is his usage going forward? And do you think that he has sort of a ceiling in this Browns offense? Or do they look so bad that do you think he just becomes a high usage, low efficiency guy, I guess?
I really don't know what to think. Like I'm also not like it's huge pressing right now, but when Kareem Hunt gets back, I don't know what the hell they're going to do. It's a problem I feel like we're ignoring for now, which we should, but as the weeks, you know, start to get closer, it's going to become more and more of a problem. And I think if you are the Nick Chubb owner, you literally ride this out until then and then kind of deal with the consequences at that point. Because if you're seeing this workload and performing really well, I think you just ride it out. He's the best part of the offense, which is insane.
Yeah. I think you're right there. I mean, and like he hasn't done some of the things that made him so special last year, like some of the big plays and some of the red zone work and that kind of stuff. Like that hasn't really entirely been there yet. So I'm still sort of, you know, waiting for that to that other shoe to drop or whatever, so to speak. But we'll see sort of how it goes. I have one league, my second biggest league outside of the, you know, the one that you and I are in and that all of us are in, where I have Christian McCaffrey as the anchor or whatever, but I've been riding as my RB2 and my flex, Nick Chubb and Austin Eckler, and both of them have like serious concerns in terms of like other people coming back and taking usage later in the year. And like, I've been ignoring it completely until this week. And like now, like really today, it's just been like whenever I have a free moment in the back of my head, I'm just like, oh, fuck. Like, what do I do about this? How do I address this? Like,
that looming doubt is coming from – we're already halfway to that point where, you know, Kareem Hunt can come back and, well, very vaguely for Melvin Gordon perhaps. So that might have hit you just like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was like, oh wow, it's about to be week four, you know? Yeah. Like it's not just like week one yet or week one anymore. So yeah, I don't know. It's a little bit worrisome, but what can you do? All right, let's move on to the Texans. As their top two receivers, who we really expected to be complete studs this year, in DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller, continue to be kind of eh. 7 targets, 6 catches, 67 yards for Hopkins, and then 7 targets, 5 catches, 51 yards for Fuller. When do these guys break out?
I mean, I feel like Hopkins had like an amazing week one, but
yeah,
he hasn't kept, you know, that sort of pace, obviously. Fuller, I don't know. I feel like these guys are just going to explode at one point. I don't know if it's this week against the Panthers, but I feel like any week it could happen due to their skill sets. Like Hopkins, going to get his, no problem. Fuller just has to connect once and you're golden. So I still feel like Fuller is still a John Brown sort of level flex or wide receiver 3 that you plug in there and he could win you your week.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's also kind of a guy I might be looking to trade for, because the owner, and as someone who owns a lot of Will Fuller too, like I've been a little bit frustrated with him. So like if I'm getting frustrated with him a little bit and I get that like the breakout's still coming, then like what about the guys who don't necessarily get that, you know?
Would you trade Connor for Fuller if you're in that situation?
Not straight up.
What else would you do?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Like, I would be – well, because Connor for Fuller just seems like two guys who are underperforming. And if I'm the Connor owner, I don't feel like I won that trade, you know?
Very fair.
But I feel like – like, Fuller, like, what I've been trying to do is where I don't have him – is trade for him in sort of like a package, or like act like he's just like a throw-in to like the trade or that kind of thing. But I don't know. It's a little bit of a weird call there. But I do think I'd be trying to buy a little bit low on him at this point.
Yeah. I mean, that example is a guy that we just talked about disguising in his own trade, and we just kind of exposed, like, do you want to just sell both of them low?
It's yeah. Like,
you don't even want to swap them.
Yeah, just swap lowly performing players and be like, I don't want them. Yeah, I don't want them either.
Get them off my team.
Yeah, don't make me think about this. All right, well, I think that it, you know, it could be this week, honestly, against the Panthers. We'll see, but the Panthers secondary has been pretty solid, so I guess we'll see what happens. We talked about Darrell Williams, so I don't think we need to go into that. But let's talk a little bit about Zeke. Because while he had a good game, this is now 2 weeks that he has ceded work to Pollard in blowout games. And I know it's blowouts, but Pollard has 13 or more carries in weeks 1 and 3. Week 2, he did not in the game that was actually a game. I don't know. Like, do you think even in non-blowouts, like, Pollard's been playing well. Do you think there's any chance that they go to him a little bit more? Like, is he a guy who you can maybe consider as a flex here? Or is this or am I just kind of reading too much into these blowouts that Dallas has been having?
Probably reading into it a little bit too much. I know it's exciting, Walsh, but you got to focus. You can't be doing this all the time.
Yeah, I know.
No, but I understand where you're coming from. It's, you know, again, the blowouts kind of cloud people's judgment, and you want to potentially, you know, he could wind up being a flex option as the season goes on. But I just feel like the Cowboys are not being idiots with Zeke. They just signed him to a massive contract, and why would they keep playing him against the Dolphins when they can see what Pollard can do, new rookie, and his, you know, when he's been sort of spelling Zeke, he's been playing well. So I feel like, give him a little treat, go out there, have a good time. Zeke gets a break, everybody wins except for Zeke owners. So I feel like that's what they're doing.
Fair enough. Are you concerned at all about Zeke's lack of use in the pass game so far this year?
That is very concerning, because I feel like his ceiling sort of takes a hit. We've seen him take, I feel like it's almost like the Gurley situation, but a little better than that situation, where they just kind of stop feeding him the ball on the screens that we've seen Zeke take to the house. I also feel like they haven't had to scheme too much for their games. They've been in blowouts every single week, like the Patriots. So we haven't really seen what they're going to do in a close game, or where they have to focus a little more on a tough opponent.
Yeah, and hopefully this is the week. You know, obviously New Orleans is not as good as they were with Drew Brees out. But Dallas is on the road against them this week. It's the Sunday night game, so that should be pretty fun. Dallas is a 2.5-point favorite with a 47 over-under. So, like, expected to be pretty close and, like, relatively high scoring. This could be sort of a week where we see Zeke's usage increase a little bit in the pass game, particularly with Michael Gallup still out. And Dak maybe needing to look to other places. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to remind you guys that we are here courtesy of MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, guys, the NFL season is the best time of the year. So make sure you are using that promo code Let's Talk. It's going to get you 100% sign-up bonus up to $1,000. Vinny, let's take a moment to take a break, and we'll be right back with the rest of the podcast.
You're listening to Let's Talk Fantasy Football, home of the brutally honest fantasy advice you've always needed.
All right, guys, welcome back. We are going to go through two more things for you here tonight. So we got some streamer options for the week ahead, as well as a Thursday night preview. Make sure we got that covered. So Vinny, let's start with some streamers at quarterback. And number one, I think it's obviously Daniel Jones, right?
Yeah. And this could, you know, he played so well, you don't want to get like overzealous with it, but he could potentially be one of those guys that you're considering on a week to week basis, depending on what happens. I feel like, you know, also cupcake matchup coming up, you know, against the Redskins, but without Saquon, they're going to have to throw a shit ton more. And I feel like if he's using his weapons, they get Golden Tate back next week. Used Evan Ingram and Shepard to their full capacity last week, and it netted them the win. So if they're going to be throwing a lot, and, you know, you got to assume they're down a lot because they're still a pretty rough team, there's a lot of upside to taking Daniel Jones, not just as a streamer this week, but potentially season long.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, this is – I think a lot of it in terms of his season long – outlook is that not only did he, you know, throw the ball for over 300 yards, but he ran it four times for 28 yards and had two rushing touchdowns. Now, obviously the two rushing touchdowns is not something that is going to happen every single week, but the fact that he can run the ball and he can provide those extra points on the ground, I think really increases his floor in a way that you don't necessarily see with some of these other quarterbacks who debuted this past week. So keep that in mind with him. Like you said, great matchup. Definitely someone to pick up and start this week. The next option is Kyle Allen versus Houston. Houston's secondary is not great, and Kyle Allen slings the pig.
Hell yeah, man. I'm with you. I know this is your show, so Kyle Allen, again, I feel like he sort of has the Daniel Jones potential. If Cam is going to be out for a prolonged period of time, and if Kyle Allen is the real fucking deal, you get a good stream and potentially a lottery ticket for the rest of the season. So I think this is another no-brainer. I got to ask Walsh, who would you prefer for not only this week, but season long out of Daniel Jones and Kyle Allen, sort of the new guys on the block we got here?
I think it's Daniel Jones because of that rushing upside that I mentioned. You know, Kyle Allen threw for four touchdowns this past week, and Daniel Jones had more fantasy points than him. You know, it's a situation where I think he's definitely the number one, but I also think Kyle Allen, like you said, you put it very eloquently there, where good streamer for this week, plus could be a lottery ticket for the rest of the year. And then that's what I think really separates these two guys from the other two guys that we're going to talk about.
Absolutely.
So those other two are Case Keenum versus the Giants. I know Case Keenum just looked like absolute trash on Monday Night Football, but it's the Giants secondary that Jameis just tore apart. So not really concerned there. And then Stafford versus the Chiefs. Talk to me about this one and why you like him.
I just like Stafford because, you know, they just beat the shit out of the Eagles kind of in a game that we expected them to lose. And now I believe they're home. First, the Chiefs, Marvin Jones, Kenny Galladay. I feel like Hockenson had a way better game than, you know, the sheet would apply from last week. He had a touchdown taken away. I think two other big plays. So he's got the weapons. I feel like he can be a quality stream against the Chiefs defense that's literally always on the field and always getting attacked during those shootouts with, you know, Mahomes.
Okay. Yeah, 100%. I mean, this is the highest over-under game of the week, as most Chiefs games seems to be these days. But yeah, I completely agree with you there. It's a pretty solid pickup, as well as some of his, you know, passing weapons should be options this week for you.
I got to ask you, Walsh, if you stream Case Keenum, are you worried about him getting benched for Haskins if they perform poorly in the first half? Because I feel like if this was a different case, and I talked about Jay Gruden being an idiot and possibly throwing him in last week to get teed off on against like the Bears, he was smart enough to not do that. But in a division game versus the Giants, at halftime they're down by like multiple scores. Is there a chance we see Haskins?
Yeah, I think he might be right there. It's definitely a concern that I think Stafford doesn't have. And I think that's as good as a reason as any to put Stafford above Keenum on the ranking of streamers this week. So yeah, that's a very, very good concern. That's a very good call out on your part. That's definitely something that's within the realm of possibilities.
Yeah. And it's not like Keenum's playing bad. It's just, they're losing and they have Haskins and they need to know what they have. So it's something that was probably going to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Moving on to tight end. I think the number one option for me is Will Dissly. He has 3 touchdowns in 2 games in the past 2 games. I know the one this week came on a play literally after the clock had already expired. So if you started him this week, you really got bailed out by that one. But
like also he already had 5 for 52. So he was already, you know, doing a decent job if you streamed him, which is not the worst.
Yeah, it's sort of just a bonus that put him over the top. And then, of course, this week he gets Arizona. We know what Arizona does for opposing offenses. I wouldn't look too closely about, you know, well, I mean, I was going to say I wouldn't worry too much about, like, the specific stats versus tight ends, but Greg Olsen just, like, kicked ass versus Arizona.
I think they've given up the most points throughout these first 3 weeks, so it's a no-fucking-brainer.
Yeah, absolutely. So if he's on your wire, pick him up, start him. You could be like me and have George Kittle on the bye in almost every one of your leagues. I will be trying to get myself some Will Dissly this week, that is for sure. Next guy on my list was Dawson Knox, the little-known rookie tight end for the Bills. Before I said where he plays, you might not have known who I was talking about. 4 targets in each of the last 2 games. The first game, he didn't really do anything with it, but this past one, he turned that into 3 catches for 67 yards and a touchdown. Yeah, what do you think about Dawson Knox?
I'd rather not. I'm just not going to bank on that at all. The Bills tight end, like that's – I feel like it was kind of like the big game that Texans tight end, Jordan Atkins had for the Texans. Like that's not something you're necessarily going to bank on. Even for a stream, you'd have to get incredibly lucky, you know, to predict that sort of shit.
Fair enough. I'm not arguing with you. I just think tight end is very, very thin.
That's why you pick up our next guy, and I feel like you should probably just play him every single week at this point.
All right, Jason Witten, 4 targets a week. He's turning that into like 50 yards, and outside of this past week, he's turning it into a touchdown.
Lost the bet.
Yeah, and what can you do? Maybe it'll come back this week.
Maybe, but yeah, like I said to Will Dissly, he already put up like his couple catches, 50-plus yards. So Witten's doing that every single week, upside of a touchdown in that offense. I feel like he's probably going to be someone's starter like for the rest of the season.
Fair enough. A guy that we had talked about a little bit before this past week was Tyler Eifert. He ended up with only 1 target, 1 catch for 18 yards this past week. Do you have any sort of inclination to play him?
No, unless it's like a really plus matchup, like if the Bengals were playing the Cardinals.
Like they do in 2 weeks, you mean?
Yes. So that's when I'll talk up Tyler Eifert and be mega disappointed when he doesn't do well.
Fair enough. All right. Well, that'll do it for tight end. Let's move on to defense. I have a question about this first one, and I put it down just because they're a 16.5-point favorite. But one, they might be owned because they're expected to be a pretty decent defense, even though they have underperformed. It's the Chargers against Miami, but like the Chargers D hasn't been good this year. I know theoretically they should be. They've had a decent amount of injuries, particularly in that secondary. And really their cornerbacks haven't been what we expected. Am I wrong to not want to play the Chargers defense?
Yes, you are very wrong.
Josh Rosen wasn't that bad this past week.
No, he wasn't. But also the Cowboys have not had a great defense and they still put up a, you know, over 10 point display versus them. So I don't have a problem streaming the Chargers like whatsoever.
Okay. I know I'm being like, I know I'm getting in my own head and getting too cute on that.
Don't overthink it.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. They're a 16 point fucking favorite.
Like, even if they get eight, like that's still like you got 8 points. Like, don't even, they're going to get eight plus. So at minimum, you got to admit that.
Can I play Devontae Parker again?
You played him like you played him last week? I know you talked about it. That actually happened.
I played him in daily in a couple lineups.
That's fine. I got concerned. But yeah, play him in daily, dude. That's
he had that 45-yard catch at the beginning of the game, and then later in the game, he dropped a red zone target that was likely going to be a touchdown, and I was like, you motherfucker. But like that's what I get for playing Devontae Parker is that, you know.
Also, they drove down – immediately down to like the Cowboys like 5, and it was 4th and I think goal, and Josh Rosen's like, let's fucking go for it, and the coach is like, no, field goal. It's like, you are the worst team in the league, 0-3, go for it. Like, this is, that's ridiculous. They're just, yeah, they are tanking. So
yeah, that's like, I do not want to win here. You have to understand the amount of talent on each side of the ball and understand that if you are this close, you need to go for a touchdown. But
yeah, like
whatever.
Case in point, the Ravens playing the Chiefs last week, just went for two every time, went for it on fourth down, played the Chiefs like you're supposed to play. And like, I feel like Miami just, they don't give a fuck.
Yep. Well, what can you do there, I guess?
Nothing.
The next one we have here is the Colts versus the Raiders. You're not wrong.
I mean, Colts defense has been good mainly because they play keep away on offense, and fucking Jacoby Brissett has been a surgeon and doesn't give the ball away. So this is going to probably be the lowest scoring game of the week, and in a game where I feel like the defenses will probably benefit from that. So not a huge upside play because I feel like the Raiders don't make too many mistakes, but their offense is just kind of low powered. This is a decent play if you miss out on the Chargers and you need a defense.
Yeah, I'm not as big on this one because like this is a theoretical floor defense play, and I don't think a floor defense play exists. Like if I'm gonna go for
I did just say that too.
Yeah, no, I
basically
know.
Call them that.
Yeah. You're yeah. Right, it's like I'd rather take a risk on like a team that's really good at rushing the passer and like is playing against the bad offensive line. Like I'd rather play Pittsburgh, I think, against the Bengals.
You're not wrong there.
Fuck you. No.
You're totally right, dude. Primetime Andy Dalton, both 0-3. Like that's also a good stream.
All right, let's move on to Broncos versus the Jags. I don't know if I agree with this one either, but sell me on this one.
So, dude, the Broncos, they're I don't know, they're getting a bad rap. Like, I've talked about them last week very drunk, and I was just like, they're hanging in each game, and, like, they really are. And I feel like this defense, they have no takeaways, no sacks, no anything. They're going to hit home at some fucking point. And at home versus the Jags, I feel like this could totally happen.
Yeah,
Minshew still got some, like, stuff to round out in his game for sure. Still the coolest motherfucker in the league, but Broncos are probably a more upside play than the Colts that we were just talking about. So,
okay, that's definitely fair. You're betting on them being the Broncos defense that we expected, as opposed to the Broncos defense that they have been for the first 3 weeks of the season. So that's not the worst bet in the world. Like we keep saying that. They have Bradley Chubb and Von Miller. Like, how do you have no sacks through 3 weeks, particularly when your head coach is this guy who so many people have said is you know, the toughest defensive coach to scheme against in the league. So something has to, like, give there at some point. But, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm off them, but I understand where you're coming from for sure.
Yeah.
All right. So that I think is going to do it for our streamers. Let's get into the Thursday night game, which is going to be Philly at Green Bay. Green Bay is a 5-point favorite. The over-under here is 45.5. This game is really confusing to me because both of these teams are really confusing to me. On the Philadelphia side, we have a 3-way backfield against a team that's been bad against the rush so far, but great against the pass. We also have a banged up pass catching core. And then on the Green Bay side of the ball, we have all those things we talked about earlier where it's really kind of hard to project them. Philly has an elite run D and a bad pass D. So run me down the plays that you want to make in this game.
I mean, Davante Adams is a lock. I feel like if you're an Alshon owner, you're probably running him out there. Of course, Ertz locked in. Pretty scared of, I think, everybody else. Like if, like on the Packers side with like Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, I don't necessarily want to play either of them. And I don't know if you're in a position, if you have Aaron Jones, to do that, but I'd probably advise that you do figure something out there. Like I would probably consider like Royce Freeman this week over Aaron Jones.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm looking for any excuse to not start Aaron Jones. I think the shitty thing about them being on Thursday is that a lot of the people who you could like maybe make an excuse to not start Aaron Jones for, we're not going to know their status entirely or the people around them. So like Frank Gore or like Darrell Williams, mm-hmm. or, you know, like those types of guys who maybe you're picking up, but like you don't know whether the people in the backfield around them are going to play. Like you're not going to have the luxury of making that decision with complete knowledge of everything. So it makes it really, really difficult. So unless you have an obvious like play ahead of Aaron Jones, don't do it. But also like, what's the upside of playing Aaron Jones against Philly? I mean, I guess they're a favorite, right? But
barely. You know, them being home helps somewhat, I guess. He could fall into the end zone. We've seen him, you know, do that last week with a bad game twice. So there is, I guess, that upside, but that's not something you want to fucking bank on week to week.
Yeah.
Particularly now.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I think you're right. It is better to sit Aaron Jones if you can. You know, if you guys have questions about specific plays, please reach out to us. We'll try and get them answered as best as we can. With like Jones versus whoever, you know, whatever your specific case may be. In terms of the other guys, I mean, you mentioned Ertz. I think he's obviously a play. You know, the Packers past defense has been good. But for me, it's Ertz and Aguilar who I think are the plays. Like I'm not touching Jeffrey coming off an injury on a short week.
Probably matched up with Alexander.
Yeah, like Jair Alexander and Kevin King have both been really, really good in their second years after not being good in their first years. But that's what happens sometimes with rookie cornerbacks. So we shouldn't be that surprised. And I think we should take it as more of a fact than a fluke at this point in the season. Also, my apologies to Tremont Williams, who I thought was going to get the shit beat out of him in the slot. That has not been the case so far. He's been really good. So this whole pass defense is really good. I still think Ertz and Aguilar are just going to eat targets basically in this game. So I'm still on both of them. I'm not really on anyone else on Philly just because I want to play guys in the run game against the Packers, but I don't know if it's Miles Sanders or Jordan Howard or Darren Sproles. I don't know. I don't really understand where that's going to go.
I think weirdly for me, it's going to be Jordan Howard. I feel like he had a better game last week, got into the end zone. He looks better than Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders is having a pretty rough go, even though they're trying to feed him as much as they can. And, you know, the kind of offense that they run, he just hasn't looked great. And I know he's a rookie and whatever. It just doesn't seem to be working out right now. And I feel like they're going to want to see what they have. They know what they have in Jordan Howard. I just feel like they might utilize him a bit more. Possibly going forward, I feel like Miles Sanders might start losing work.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Sanders has been having those fumbling issues as well.
Yeah.
So it's all of that is not great. None of that is really good. On the Packers side, you mentioned starting Adams. I think him and MBS are both like sort of definites for me this week. You know, depending on who you have in front of MVS, obviously. And then this is like the first week really that I'm like very, very 100% in on starting Aaron Rodgers. And LaFleur might fuck me. LaFleur is quickly becoming like one of the coaches that I hate most in the league. But I think I'm not going to sit Rodgers against the Eagles. I can't do it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of would you play Daniel Jones or Aaron Rodgers this week?
Fuck me.
I just feel like Aaron Rodgers kind of lost his ceiling, and that has a lot to do with LaFleur.
Yeah.
Like you said, and it's just – I know the matchup is beautiful. They're at home. Shitty thing is it's Thursday night. The play calling kind of sucks, and they really got away from their bread and butter of the big plays, which is basically – targeting the fuck out of Adams and letting him and Rodgers do their thing. Also, Jimmy Graham being a non-factor is ridiculous. Like, I mean, I thought they underused him last year. Like, he's just throwing up fucking zeros.
He's been a bit injured from what I've read. So
he's banged up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's like he was only in on 41% of snaps this past week. So obviously he's not fully healthy there. But yeah, man, I don't know. The Packers are really puzzling. Matt LaFleur is a shitty guy to deal with, it seems like. And I just said that I need to play Rodgers this week, and then you immediately correctly called me out by I think I'd play Daniel Jones over him.
Right, and that was kind of like a lowball deal, like, too. Like, Daniel Jones is still, you know, kind of somewhat of an unknown, and you'd still take the upside there as opposed to Aaron Rodgers, who's been a stud, you know, ever since we've known him, and now it's kind of tailing off. I mean, it could definitely bite you. He can put up a 25-point game here because the matchup alone, it's just what we've seen so far and what we've come to expect. Thursday night games are always weird, too. I just feel like you don't need to really play Rodgers. It just kind of seems to be the case this season. Great matchup. If you want to do it, I don't blame you at all. It could totally work out. It's just what we've seen so far.
Okay. With that being said, too, would you play MVS over a guy like John Brown against New England?
Risky. I think I'd still go John Brown. I feel like the targets will bounce back for him. Playing MVS, I don't know. Allison could also have a good game because Eagles defense sucks. So it's a close call, but I'm going to go John Brown.
I'm going to throw annoying choices at you for this early in the week. MVS or Calvin Ridley against the Titans?
I'll go MVS there.
Okay. MVS or DK Metcalf against Arizona?
I'll go DK Metcalf. I feel like you can bank on his big play happening as opposed to gambling on MVS.
MVS or Stephon Diggs against Chicago?
MVS. Okay. That's way easier than I wanted that one to be.
Okay.
Poor fucking Diggs. We probably should have talked about that too.
Yeah, it's
that's rough as hell.
It's tough, and the matchup against Chicago doesn't make it any easier this week.
No. Although he will see Buster Screen, so
he might. Really, though?
In the slot?
Has he been running in the slot as much? I know Thielen's been in there somewhat, but
if they're smart, I feel like they should attack that. But yeah. Again, that's not something you want to – at this point, you can't really bank on Diggs getting more than three targets, which is fucking absurd.
Yeah. Well, what can you do there? All right. I think that should do it in terms of our Thursday night preview. You got anything else for the people before we let them go, Vinny?
No, good luck. Keep your cool. It's still early. I'm going to stop saying that week six. It's still early, guys.
Week 11. It's still early, guys. You can come back from your 0-11 start.
I could get three wins. You know, no big deal. But, yeah, try not to panic. But also, as we've talked about, kind of realize situations that guys are in, like Diggs and Connor, and try to figure shit out.
Yeah, it's tough. It's been an interesting year so far. I'm sure it will continue to be interesting and puzzling and all those sorts of things. And we'll try and parse through it the best that we can. But yeah, I think that'll do it for us. Keep an eye out for the preview. I believe that should be Shrek and Rodgers, and that'll be two parts again. But you'll be getting that as the week goes on. So again, keep that eye out for Vinny for Let's Talk Fantasy Football. I am Walsh. Later, podcast.
This has been Let's Talk Fantasy Football. Thanks for listening.